Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport. Thank you for coming back to the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. I am Terry Foy, and once again, we are talking about how recruiting works. This time on Friday, August 29th. Well, recording on August 27th, but it's the last podcast that's going to go up before September 1st, and I'm very excited to be joined by Andrew Baxter, head coach of the Fairfield Stags. Bax, how you doing, my man?
Great, Terry. Thanks for having me on. Appreciate it.
No doubt. Last podcast before September 1st. A lot of pressure. No pressure at all.
Yeah, I hope this recruiting doesn't pinge on this podcast. But
I think that's right.
It's going to be a catalyst.
So excited for this conversation. I've known you for a really long time, hold you in high regard, and going to start in the place that we start this conversation all the time. Two questions that we ask everybody because I think they're super useful for setting a baseline. The first is, folks take for granted the importance of recruiting. Some coaches say, it's my program's lifeblood. Others view themselves more developmental and kind of say, I'll take whoever you give me, and I'll turn them into the team that I want them to be. How do you describe the role that recruiting takes in Fairfield's program, and how important is it to you as a coach?
Yeah, I think in terms of that spectrum, I definitely fall somewhere in the middle. I think there's a place for recruiting potential and developing that potential. But at the same time, when you are recruiting, you are recruiting the lifeblood of your program and the what you want your program to stand for and the character that they exude playing the game, So, I think I probably stand somewhere in the middle there. And definitely, pride myself on a guy that can recruit, potential and develop that potential.
Do you like recruiting?
I have a love-hate relationship with recruiting. I enjoy many parts of it. The part I enjoy the most is probably just what we talked about there a little bit, is kind of going out and being able to evaluate players, athletically, that you feel like might be good fits for your program. And then I think also the process of getting them on campus and getting to know them and bringing in the character, like I mentioned before, into your program. I really enjoy that part. As I get older, the travel is not what I really enjoy as much anymore, but I do enjoy the actual art, like we were talking about before, of recruiting.
Well, then let's dive into that, because that's the second question that we begin all these podcasts with, which is how you describe yourself as an evaluator. And to be a little bit more specific, again, to use the notion of a spectrum, the way I isolate it is, at one end of the spectrum is athleticism, athletic traits. At the other end of the spectrum is production, oftentimes correlated with skill. How would you say you fall in that spectrum?
Yeah, I was prepared for that question because I listened to a few podcasts before of a couple guys and hoping you're going to ask that. And again, I think I fall probably somewhere right in the middle, because I think, the one thing I was thinking about when I was listening to guys talk about it in previous podcasts was, I think it also depends on kind of the roles or positions that you're looking to fill, whether you need a producer or an athlete, and obviously all those guys fall in somewhere in the middle of that spectrum. And I think, but at the same time, it is probably the hardest thing that we have to deal with in terms of recruiting, and a lot of that conversations we have as a staff revolve around is he athletic enough? Oh, but he scores a lot of goals, but can he, is he going to be able to play at the Division I level? Is he going to be durable enough? Those type of questions. So I think, again, for me, I fall somewhere in the middle. I think you have to have, you got to recruit the best athletes you can, and recruit the potential like we were talking about before. But at the same time, you certainly have to look at the production, whether that's goals and assists or ground balls as a defenseman. And I think what we try to do from a production standpoint and an athleticism standpoint is take as many data points as we can to figure out where those kids maybe fall on that spectrum as well, .
100%. So each of these conversations, I want to orient around an individual element in order to avoid them being repetitive or redundant. And, you know, when I look at your tenure at Fairfield, you're heading into year seven. One of the things that is pretty clear to me, well, one of the things that's indisputable is that you're coming off of the best season in your tenure. 12-3 campaign, fell a little shorter than you might have wanted in the CAA semifinals, but certainly up to that point had put together an incredible season. And then what may be a little bit more open for interpretation is that when I look at the commitments that you've gotten in the class of 2026, I say, well, I mean, they picked up a ton of players that I personally like. Now, you know, we'll dive into a little bit more of the beauty is in the eye of the beholder type situation. But when you conflate those two observations, one fact, one opinion, it suggests that you're kind of hitting your stride. And as a first-time head coach who hadn't been at Fairfield before, I'm curious how you describe the process of getting to know an institution.
Yeah, it's a great question. I think it's like anything else. It's a little bit of trial and error in terms of, you know, where you can land recruits from, I think. You know, we had an idea of who we wanted to recruit early on, and I think as we've as the trajectory of the program has increased every year since I've been here, I think now we're getting interest from some of the kids that we would have liked to have gotten interest from the beginning. And you know, it's one of those things where we really haven't changed, but now that the kids are more aware of our program and we've become more nationally prominent, that we are getting some traction with, you know, higher caliber programs and higher caliber athletes and that kind of thing. So I think, again, it's to answer your question directly, I think it's just a little bit of trial and error about, all right, hey, who are the good, you know, high school programs that are going to be good fits for Fairfield? Who are the type of kids that we're going to attract or are attracted to Fairfield? And then who are the kids that you know, might not have Fairfield on their radar that we can attract to Fairfield as well?
And let's dive in a little bit on that last one. How do you describe the process of getting someone who doesn't know Fairfield to know it a little bit better, especially given the fact that, you know, to my last question, it's something that you have a lot of personal experience with?
Yeah, I think one of the questions I ask in early phone calls with recruits is, hey, how much do you know about Fairfield? And, you know, it's pretty amazing, actually, the amount of kids that do say, hey, you know, I my neighbor went to school there. I have someone in my family that went to school there. Or there's usually some sort of connection. You know, how much the kid knows about Fairfield after that depends. So I think it, but usually we have an in, which has been great. And then I think it's obviously just describing what makes Fairfield great after that to tell kids a little bit more about it. And I think one of the biggest things we found is getting kids on campus is one of the biggest things we do here to attract kids. Once we get them on campus, they realize how great a place it is, you know, how great the campus is, how great a town Fairfield is, where we are geographically, all the things that make this place special. And I think, so that's, you know, getting a hook in there and then dragging them in, getting them on campus has been probably the biggest thing.
One of the things about getting them on campus and getting to show them how great Fairfield is that it can be a little bit of a double-edged sword. And, you know, we've talked about this in a lot of contexts, whether it be Big Ten football schools where, for as alluring as game day Saturdays are, you know, they can knock you off your trajectory once you're, you know, a part of the team if you let it. And I think, you know, whether it's Jacksonville's proximity to the beach or the allure of Burlington and the mountains at Vermont, you know, a lot of programs have that kind of risk associated with it. And Fairfield's no different. You know, anybody that's seen videos of the houses on the beach at Fairfield know how incredibly appealing it is. How have you tried to strike that balance?
Yeah, I think that was, you know, going back to your previous question too, I think that was one of the things that I knew I needed to navigate, or maybe I didn't know when I got here, but then soon after I got here, in my first year or two, realized that was definitely what I needed to navigate and try to figure out how that we could make that a positive for our program. And I think, the biggest thing I did was, it was actually a little anecdote here, Terry. It was funny. I think it was my first year, first or second year, And I was telling myself, you know, I don't know if I want to recruit kids that want to come to Fairfield because they want to live on the beach. And I remember telling the incoming freshmen on the field one day that they weren't going to be allowed to live on the beach their senior year. And then totally retracting that a couple days later after realizing that that wasn't a very smart idea. It wasn't fair to them. They came to Fairfield for all these different reasons. And so from that day forward, what I've done is I've just had conversations with guys that about their off-campus living situation, know what they're getting into. I want to know where they're living, who they're living with, and making sure that their commitment level to the Fairfield lacrosse program doesn't waver because they are living on the beach. I think that's just been the biggest thing, and it's become a conversational piece, and really raised our level of commitment. You know, guys know that they have the privilege to live on the beach, but they also know that they have to responsibility to get to know the incoming freshmen on campus and spend time on campus after practice and things like that. So that's probably how I've been able to work that as a positive for our program. And now we do sell the beach, and we try to get as many kids that visit campus down to the beach to go see what it looks like and experience that as on their visits.
I love that, because what that says to me is the notion of trust, meaning that, like, you're basically saying there is a downside here. There is risk, there is temptation, and it can undercut what we both agree are your goals. And so, you know, but at the same time, it's there are upsides. It's awesome. And so I'm not going to preemptively cut off the opportunity for you to access this upside. But instead, I'm gonna make it an opportunity for us to come to an understanding exactly what these goals are and exactly what these opportunities are going to do in terms of affecting our ability to achieve our goals.
Exactly. And the guys know that they're on board with knowing that the beach can help us get, you know, recruits and so they're all on board as a part of the overall experience at Fairfield. And I think that's been, you know, I know maybe we'll talk about this, maybe we won't, but I think the biggest sell that I have when I have recruits in my office here is just the overall experience of Fairfield and the off-campus living on the beach is a part of that.
So one of the things that I'm particularly interested in is a comment that you brought up about knowing where you can find guys that might be interested in Fairfield or might be a good fit. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's something that came up on a couple prior conversations. And what it really spoke to me was about the notion of, you know, getting guys that were going to come in prepared because you knew what they had gone through from the standpoint of their high school experience, both academically and athletically. But at the same time, you know, I'm sure that you've had to balance it because, you know, there are guys that come from programs that you're less familiar with, but they're really talented. And, you know, now that you have more than a half decade of being a head coach under your belt, you know, a couple decades of being a college lacrosse coach under your belt, I'm sure you've got examples of guys who have had success from both paths. How do you balance trying to have the assurance of familiarity while also not being closed off to the upside of unfamiliarity?
Yeah, I'm probably sounding redundant here in my neutrality, but I'm definitely in the middle there. And I think it's a balance when you're looking at your team of saying, like, all right, you know, I kind of know what I'm getting if I'm recruiting a kid from this program, you know, for the most part. And then so having a balance of those type of players in your program and recruiting those programs and knowing what you're getting and then taking some chances on whether that's a, you know, a non-traditional kid or a kid that just wasn't seen on the recruiting trail as much, or you don't have as solid of an athletic evaluation on, or things like that, and you rely on your relationships with coaches to tell you how great of a kid he is or how good of a player he is and that kind of thing. So I think it's that art we were talking about earlier of balancing those things to get, you know, the best players you can, obviously, but I think trying to balance those two things, I guess.
So you're the head coach at a Catholic Jesuit school, you know, mid-sized enrollment, I would call it, in a very easily accessed metro area that plays competitive lacrosse. That means that you fit the profile with like a dozen other programs. How do you confront the challenge of just you're probably going to be recruiting against the same programs a lot. And you kind of have this phenomenon of you win some battles, you lose others. And then you're going to be a place that when you win battles, it means that a lot of your commitments are going to get targeted by other programs because you tend to recruit guys that both, you know, come from networks where they're well known. They come from institutions where they develop well over the course of, you know, their post-commitment high school career. Mm-hmm. In a way, it's a compliment, but on the other hand, it's a challenge.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think, I know I've a lot of coaches will say this, but yeah, we want guys that want to be here, you know? So like that's, if we're recruiting a kid who's looking at similar, you know, profile schools, and we'll be completely upfront with them of what their experience is going to look like here and how they're going to get treated and go through all those things. And at the end of the day, you know, we want guys that want to be here. So if they want that out of their experience, they feel like that hits and that feels good to them, then those are the guys that we want. And those are typically the guys that do really well here, you know? So
what's interesting about that though, is that pretty much none of those similar profile institutions are in your league. Is it fair to say that, like, relative to a lot of other schools in that profile, like, you're actually not recruiting against the teams in your league very often?
Very, very true. Very true. I think.
What's that mean in terms of, like, how you build a roster that's prepared to take on the likes of UMass and Towson? Well, I guess at this point,
that's a great question. I think that was one of the biggest challenges that I saw when I got here. I just felt like we had some good athletes on the team, obviously, but I thought when we got here my first couple of years, in general, we just needed to get a little bit more bigger and athletic. And I'd never been a size guy per se, but then I felt like that's something that we've made an emphasis to recruit is some bigger kids, because we were just getting beat up by Towson and UMass when UMass was in the league, and Delaware, they were just bigger and faster and stronger than us. And we've really, the other thing we've done to that is we've really put an emphasis on our weight room and the development there. And we're upfront with recruits when we get them here on campus. We say, listen, you're in the fall, you're going to lift 5-6 days a week. Our freshmen put on an average of 12 to 15 pounds in the fall and things like that. So like, we've really put an emphasis there to get bigger, faster, and stronger. And then obviously that you do it through recruiting and you do it through strength and conditioning development. But, I think, that was one of the biggest things, to your point, to your question, I guess, we do have a little bit of a niche in our league, I think, with that, but at the same time, so going back to that, recruiting those athletes was how we wanted to compete with Towson and Delaware when they were in the league, and UMass when they were in the league, you know, and some of the top teams in our league. So I think that's helped us. And then I don't know. I forget the second part of your question, to be honest with you.
Well, it wasn't really a two-parter. You kind of answered the first part, but the second part is, I guess, to the extent, like, so does it mean that you've been able to, I guess, your identity is being unique, meaning you're more differentiated from the other CAA programs? And as a result, like, how do you try to use that, you know, in a ninja-like way to outflank the you know, predominantly state school competition?
Yeah, I mean, I think that you're always looking for ways to, you know, spin things, and I think that's one of our niches for sure. Is, you know, I think we're the most competitive academic institution in our conference, which, you know, we play on that as well when we're recruiting, you know, high academic against high academic schools, but also schools in our league, you know, where kids that's attractive to a lot of kids, you know, obviously. So yeah, I mean, I think, and that was the other thing. I think when I got here too, knowing kind of what the league was about, having some experience in the league when I was at Drexel as well, was knowing that the league was primarily a heavy 6-on-6 league, meaning there was a lot of, I felt like a lot of the coaches in the league put a heavier emphasis on the 6-on-6 versus maybe a full field game. So when I got here, we really kind of wanted to separate ourselves from a stylistically to play a little bit more full field and put more emphasis on the ride and the clear and the transition game. And now I think that's gotten to us a point now, and I think we're kind of at a point where that is our niche. Like when I do talk to other coaches, they're like, yeah, we, you know, this is what we focused on when we were scouting you guys, we're looking at you guys and these type of things. So I think we want to continue with that. And now we just got to continue to hone in on some of the other areas where we know we can get a little bit better. But, so that's another area that we focused on as well, to kind of separate ourselves.
And I would imagine you were particularly well suited to develop that style, given your experience at Yale, you know, which was a very transition-oriented group while you were there, right?
Yes, absolutely. Took a lot of those things that we were doing there that we had success with and implemented them here. And, you know, obviously every year you evolve and we've made some changes to some of that, but systematically, a very, very similar style of play for sure.
That kind of creates the opportunity to, you know, go down a path that I enjoy going down with different folks in terms of just exploring what you took from each of the stops along the way. You mentioned you were at Drexel. You know, I mentioned that you were at Yale, and prior to that, you were at Ohio State. Do you mind just tracing your coaching career and you know, shouting out a thing or two that might stand out as being really significant in terms of what you learned and how you've incorporated it into your approach now?
Yeah, for sure. And I'll try to tie it into recruiting as well as best I can. I think my first stop was actually at Colgate University with Jim Nagel right out of college. So my first 2 years of coaching was at Colgate. And quick story there, tying it back to recruiting, like I was saying, I think there was one day we were at a Colgate football game and Coach Nagel looks over to me. He's like, "Hey, Bax, you know, you sure you want to, you want to do this?" And I was like, I think a couple months into the job, I was like, I don't know yet, coach. You know, like I didn't really have a good answer for him. He's like, "Well, if you do," he's like, "here's what I recommend." He's like, take this summer and live up, pack everything you got, live out of your car and go to work as many camps, meet as many coaches, you know, talk lacrosse as much as you can and just network yourself. So I did that, took his advice for the next 2 summers and literally lived out of my Honda Civic. I've told people this before, but I had, this was before even GPS and all that, where, you know, I had a map and I had a highlighter and I went from Roanoke to Virginia to Fairfield, Connecticut to, you know, upstate New York, wherever, and stayed in the dorms and did all that. So that's really kind of where I cut my teeth as a coach was on the recruiting trail and tried to make a name for myself as a guy that was, you know, willing to be out there and knew a lot of kids. And so that was my Colgate experience. And then I moved on, fortunate enough to move on to Drexel and worked with Chris Bates, which was awesome experience. And my first couple years, we were at the bottom of the CAA, and then I'm proud to say my last 2 years there, we ended up winning the league, the regular season. Never won the conference tournament, made it to the NCAAs, but we won the regular season my last 2 years there. So we really took that program to the next level. And I will say that was a great experience for me recruiting wise, because of the going from opposite ends of the spectrum, from going from Colgate, which is in upstate New York, and a liberal arts education with a you know, one stoplight in town, to an urban type setting, and a co-op university. So my recruiting pitch had to completely change and kind of, you know, look at it differently about, like, all right, who are the kids that are going to be interested in now living in the city and are going to embrace that, you know. And then I moved on from Drexel. After 5 years at Drexel, went out to Ohio State and worked with Nick Myers. Had a great experience there. And again, that helped shape my recruiting as well, because it was, again, another completely different experience, where now I'm in the Big Ten, big-time football, all these things, and recruiting kids that are attracted to that and want that out of their experience, and kind of navigating that, how to where to find those kids and sell that as well. And then moved on from Ohio State to Yale. Again, completely different experience in terms of going from Big Ten football to now the Ivy League, where academics was prominent and you know, recruiting kids that were, you know, we always joked we wanted great students and great lacrosse players, and you know, those guys are rare. So finding those guys and working through that process from a recruiting perspective is really, those experiences have shaped my philosophy on recruiting and obviously coaching, working with all those great mentors that I've had.
So you just traced 4 stops, but I want to revisit a conversation that you and I had with Coach Shea in the fall of 2018. And it illustrates what I think is kind of the theme of this conversation so far, which is that like even your experiences are not uniform. And so while you were at four institutions, you had more than just four experiences. And specifically what I'm referring to is the conversation was about having to learn what it's like to recruit to a Yale that had won a national championship versus recruiting to one that had not. And the distinction I was trying to draw was that, you know, for the prior decade, Andy and, you know, all of his assistants over the course of that time talked about how, you know, basically like they were recruiting kids who either didn't want to go to Yale or for which Yale was far and away their best option because they weren't winning battles against their peer institutions. Well, when you can offer the things that you can offer at Yale from a educational and you know, post-degree network standpoint, and then round it out with a national championship contender, you know, competitive opportunity, then it's just going to change the conversations that you're a part of. And my contention was that like you had to learn how to do that because it wasn't going to be the same. And I guess I want to frame it similarly at Fairfield, which is, you know, how are you preparing for the conversations with 27s when you're coming off of the best year that you've had since you've been here relative to the conversations that you'd, you know, had the prior 6 years?
No, that's a great question. I think, I think going back to Yale too, and now Fairfield, like we always want to be aspirational with recruiting too. So like, you know, thinking about September 1 around the corner, we're gonna recruit the best guys that we've seen this summer that from an athletic and talent standpoint that we feel like could help us get to reach our goals of a national championship and conference championship and all those things. So
let me just jump in there and be a little bit more specific. So, you know, there are some guys who will say, you know, Duke, Carolina, Notre Dame is going to call him. It's not worth my time to call him. There are other guys who are going to say, I don't care. I don't care what he says. Like, you know, I want him to know that we know he's good. We think he's good. And we want him to consider us. We want to be on the radar. Where do you fall in that
lane? Right down the middle.
Oh man, middleman pass.
I'm sorry, but honestly, I think more towards being aspirational, like I was talking about before. I think, you know, coming off the year that we've had and the trajectory of the program and where I think this program can go. Again, we're going to recruit the best kids that we saw this summer. Now, with conversations that I have had with some high school and club coaches, there are kids that were on our list initially that may not be just because they just don't have an interest in Fairfield for whatever reason. But there are kids that, you know, if a coach in the conversations I've had this week, Terry, and the coach has said, hey, there's the door's not completely shut, then I'm gonna try and get in that crack. And we're going to take some, you know, call as many the kids that we thought, like I said before, that were the best that we saw this summer and guys that we feel like can really help us. So I think down the middle, but moving towards being, you know, taking those swings and recruiting those guys because we want to be in the same conversation as those schools you mentioned and the top schools in the country that are competing for championships every year.
No doubt. One element of this that kind of ties a couple things together is your staff. So had a staff change. Longtime assistant Charles Junto went to his alma mater in St. Joe's. But, you know, potentially even more excitingly, you had fundraised for an additional full-time assistant and now have that in place as well. So describe the status of your staff, what it was like to go through the hiring process, and how in recent weeks since they've come on board, you guys have talked about the combination of, let's call it, aggregating opinion on the talent pool and then spinning it forward into delineating responsibilities once you actually have the opportunity to talk to guys that might be interested in Fairfield.
We've been having those conversations this week actually, but yeah, very excited about my staff this year and excited to have more hands on deck. We hired Connor Kubikowski, who was at the defensive coordinator at Manhattan the last couple seasons. Had great success there coaching the defense, and he's got a great personality, great high character, and excited about him coming in and think it'll be pretty seamless transition, hopefully, with him taking over the defense from Coach Junto, who did a great job for us. And then I hired Matthew Nunes, who's a goaltender at Virginia. The last 4 years, had a great career, was a highly touted recruit himself. And some of the conversations I had, I actually asked Matthew yesterday. I said, hey, you were one of the top recruits in the country. I said, what are some of the things that persuaded you to go to Virginia? You know, and he talked about just the love that he felt from Coach Tiffany and his staff at the time. And he had had Virginia on his radar for a little while. So it was kind of a place he really wanted to go to. But he did mention, you know, feeling the love on early on in the process, which is something I think we had success with the last couple of years, in that first week of trying to get, you know, creative with some of the things we're doing, and with whether that be home visits or official visits or how we're getting our hooks into these kids. And then I hired Matt Rice, who played for me the last 4 years and was a captain of the team last year, as our director of ops and graduate assistant as well. So, conversations with the staff have been good so far. We're actually headed on a retreat this weekend together to kind of, get on the same page. More probably culture and calendar and X's and O's than recruiting. We've met a couple times already this week on September 1st, but we're going to meet again here before Monday, just to go over our list one last time. But feel like we have a pretty good handle on the class, between myself, Coach T.O., who's going into year three here with me. We got good evaluations and feel like, we have a good target list of guys that going back to our the last question or our previous conversation about, you know, guys we feel like we're gonna take some swings at and be aspirational with, and guys that are in our wheelhouse that we want to show love as well too. So, it's kind of where we're at.
I don't want to be biased towards new, and you kind of mentioned him there at the end, but Adrian Torak Orban is one of my favorites, and like you said, he's been on your staff for a while. What does he bring to the table? What does he bring to the combination of talent evaluation and developing relationships?
He's great. I've never seen a guy that just doesn't get nothing bothers him. It's incredible. He's like so unwavering in his positive attitude, and it's infectious, you know. Like I could be really upset about something, I look at him, he's like, what are you talking about? And so I think it's been, had a positive impact on our program and our guys. At practice, I think our him and I have great synergy, and I'm already feeling it with the new staff here as well. And he's been great.
So spinning it forward a little bit, what is September 1st? What does it represent? How do you try to approach it? What do you want to get done on Labor Day Monday?
Yeah, I think, we are planning on right now, I think, trying to get out to some guys' houses, do some home visits early. That we had success with that last year, something we did for some of the guys that were on the top of our list positionally. We're hoping to do that this year. And then I think the other thing, like I mentioned before, I think this year we're also going to add, try to get some kids here that we might not be able to get to them, to bring them in here, something we haven't done a lot of, but the official visit, and bring them in, whether that's fly them in or bring them and their parents on to, you know, give them some incentive to, more incentive to get to campus, I think, early on. September 1st is an exciting time. I think I'm most excited to have conversations with some of these kids based on the year we had last year too, and talk to them about kind of where the program has come and kind of where we're continued to go. That's what I'm most excited about, to share the story of Fairfield over the past couple of years and let them know, you know, what our goals are and how they can help us compete for championships.
It's interesting that you bring up the value of being early, because there's another school of thought that there's a lot of value in being last. You hear all the time about coaches who have recruits on campus that have visits scheduled after theirs, and they, you know, work like hell to get the commitment before the kid leaves, because they know that if he does and if he takes that visit, he's probably going to go to that place instead of this place. So where do you, how do you regard that notion, and how does it fit into to where your approach currently sits?
Yeah, I think I've definitely moved towards, moved towards trying to be the first with the most love. that's helped us here, I think, where we are as a program. And I think if kids know that, you know, they're at the top of your list and you show them the most love, we've had success with that. Now that's not to say that our process doesn't extend, you know, later on, and, you know, we'll recruit. We have some 2026 is coming to campus here, you know, the next couple of weeks as well. So our process is longer at times, but I do think in terms of September 1 and targeting some of the guys that we're going to go after, I think getting in there early, showing them the first and most love is can be effective.
So you mentioned telling the story of the year that you had and the rate of improvement. What is the story? Like, I'm not asking for your pitch, but I am asking, like, what do you attribute the increased quality of the on-field product to?
I think it's all comes back to, again, I know this is a recruiting podcast, Terry, but it does come back to recruiting and the character of the kids that we brought in over the last that you know, were part of last year's team and are the guys that are in our locker room this year. There is a high character student athlete in our locker room right now that cares a ton about Fairfield lacrosse, and they care about, you know, the product and the attention to the detail that it takes to get the wins. They care about their reputation. They care about, we always talk about what people would say if strangers came to watch us practice, what would they say about you and our team? We have that conversation a ton, right? And so they take pride in that of showing people what Fairfield lacrosse is about. And I think that's the story for us, is that if you can feel the connectivity, you can feel the trust, you can feel the love in our locker room right now and the commitment that guys have for Fairfield lacrosse.
Let's use two examples to dive a little deeper into that. So the first guy I want to talk about in terms of how you recruited him, and I'm going to ask you, is his last name Radosic or Radosic? Where is the emphasis?
Radosic.
See? A third option. Didn't even know it was out there. Julian Radosic from Del Barton, who was one of the best freshmen in the entire country 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And he made the decision to come back, and he met his level of production. Fairfield's a place where a couple guys have entered the transfer portal, gone on to find success at other programs. And he spoke to Kevin Brown early on in the 2025 season and said that wasn't for him. Mm-hmm. How do you describe the process of finding and reeling in Julian and what he's meant to the program?
Yeah, it goes back to the beginning of our conversation with the athleticism production type of thing too, and it being an art, right? So Julian, the type of kid he is, it was that in his process or his recruiting cycle, he played for Coach Kovacek at Del Barton in Coach Kovacek's Steps team, and that's a program, great program. Obviously, they produce some great players, but they don't play in a lot of the high-profile tournaments that a lot of other club teams do. So Julian flew under the radar a little bit when it came to some of the events that maybe he would have been seen at. And we were able to identify Julian at one of those events early on, and then he was a guy that had shown some interest in us. And so we had gone through his film a few times and was really impressed with his film. And my assistant at the time, Coach Junta, who we talked about earlier, was really high on him and was a guy, hey, Coach, you know, this is a guy you really got to go check out because I think really highly of him. But again, he wasn't a guy we had really had a lot of data points on, so we started to do some more collection and talking to Coach Kovacek, and had great things to say about him. And then he was a guy that I got to see play a couple times and was really impressed, and so we went full court press at that point, and there was only a couple other schools in the mix, and you know, it just it worked out for us. And you know, he's had a great career, and he'll continue to be a great player for us.
The other guy I want to talk about had a different path. Devin Lampron, originally committed to LIU. They went through a coaching change. Hill Academy product, listed in our recruiting database, is 6 foot, 140 pounds. I don't know when that was last updated, but I would imagine that was a part of the factor in his evaluation. And he committed to you guys in January of his senior year of high school, and then he scored 30 goals a little bit more than a year later. How do you describe the process with Devin?
Yeah, again, he was a guy, obviously, like you alluded to, later in the process, at least for us, you know, had gotten some looks early. He played, again, a guy that played with, I don't even know his club team. I think it was Primetime club team, but not a high profile club team that was playing in some of the bigger tournaments that, you know, a lot of guys spend their time at. And so he was flying under the radar, I think, from a club perspective. And then he did a senior year at Canterbury, and then did a PG year up at Hill Academy. And that's when we got to see him, was when Hill Academy came down here for some of the fall events. And both my assistants got to watch him play in the fall, and came back and was like, hey, this is a guy that we've heard, you know, from talking to coaches and things, would have an interest in Fairfield. And so we got right on it and got to know Devin and kind of what he was looking for out of his experience. Again, thank God it worked out.
Well, and I think it speaks to a variety of things, which is, you know, number one, the path isn't linear, right? And so, you know, while you have, I think, pretty clearly laid out the combination of, you know, how your approach has evolved as you've gotten more familiar with Fairfield, which I think is probably the theme of this podcast, as well as, you know, how that has more recently honed your approach in terms of what you think has led to the success. I have no doubt that, you know, when we talk in a month and when we talk again in 3 months, and you know, if we were to do this again in a year, you will have learned more, and there will be counterexamples pushing back on some of the things that you were really excited about implementing this September, and there are going to be new things, new strategies that you implement. I think that, you know, kind of that elasticity, that willingness to identify what those things are, right? Like that's the secret sauce.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we talk about our program. There's no losers. There's only winners and learners. Nelson Mandela quote. You know. So yeah, just constantly evolving and figuring out what works for you and how you can use the resources at your program to get the best kids possible to put on the field.
Well, that's a great note to end on. I know, Andrew Baxter, we took you away from a Wegmans launch, and we apologize for that. Know how important that is to you. Hopefully, you can find some scraps in the break room.
Appreciate it. Thanks, Terry.
Inside Lacrosse Podcasts, the source of the sport.